digestible proteins, legumes, nuts, etc., to minimize the former's negative effects on diseases and maximize the latter's nourishing effects. Minimize bad fats and sugars, and maximize good fats and complex carbs. Part of the confusion and constantly changing recommendations around diet stem from the oversimplification of food components and their categorization into fats, carbs, or proteins. Every day we hear about low-carb versus high-carb, or low-fat versus high-fat. It shouldn't be a question of either-or, but of which type and how much of each. In fact, your diet should be rich in good unsaturated fats, such as those found in olive oil, salmon, almonds, and walnuts, but as low as possible in saturated, hydrogenated, and trans fats. Likewise, the diet should be rich in complex carbohydrates, such as those provided by whole bread, legumes, and vegetables, but low in sugars and limited in pasta, rice, bread, fruit, and fruit juices, which are easily converted into sugars by the time they reach the intestine. Be nourished. You can think of the human body as an army of cells always at war. The enemy includes oxygen and other molecules that damage DNA in cells, bacteria, and viruses, which are constantly trying to defeat the immune system. Like an army in need of rations, ammunition, and equipment, the body needs proteins, essential fatty acids, omega-3, omega-6, minerals, vitamins, and yes, sufficient levels of sugar to fight the many battles raging inside and outside cells. When your intake of certain nutrients becomes too low, the body's repair, replacement, and defense systems slow down or stop, allowing the damage to accumulate or fungi, bacteria, and viruses to proliferate. The appendixes include a list of foods rich in each of the important nutrients, as well as sample weekly diets that meet established nutritional targets. As extra insurance, take a multivitamin and mineral pill plus an omega-3 fish oil soft gel every 2 or 3 days. Purchase these products only from reputable companies where quality control ensures appropriate supplement content and stability. Eat a variety of foods from your ancestry. To take in all the required nutrients, you need to eat a wide variety of foods, and it's best to choose from foods that were common on your parents', grandparents', and great-grandparents' table. This does not mean you should eat like your grandparents, but that within the guidelines of this book, you should pick foods your grandparents ate. The human body is the result of billions of years of evolution, and even the last 1,000 years have helped filter out people not fit for a particular environment, or foods not appropriate for a particular genotype, the collection of all genes in a person. For example, in many northern European countries where milk was commonly consumed, intolerance to lactose, the sugar contained in milk, is relatively rare, whereas lactose intolerance is very common in southern European and Asian countries where milk was not historically part of the traditional diet of adults. If a person of Japanese ancestry living in the United States suddenly decides to start drinking milk, which was probably rarely served at her grandparents' table, she will likely start getting sick. Whether it's lactose or kale, quinoa or turmeric, curcumin, you have to ask whether these were foods common at the table when you, your parents, or your grandparents were growing up. If not, it's best to avoid them or consume them only occasionally. The potential problems are intolerances, for example, an inability to break down the lactose sugar in milk, or autoimmunities, such as the reaction to gluten-rich foods like bread and pasta observed in people with celiac disease. Although clear links have not been proved yet, it is possible that consumption of the wrong foods based on ancestry could be associated with many autoimmune disorders, including Crohn's disease, colitis, and type 1 diabetes. Eat twice a day plus a snack. Unless your waist circumference and body weight are in the normal or low range, it is best to eat breakfast and one major meal plus a nourishing low-calorie, low-sugar snack daily. If your weight or muscle mass is too low, or if it's dropping against your will, then eat 3 meals a day plus a snack. One of the major mistakes of guidelines on nutrition is blurring the line between what theoretically could work and what actually does work. We often hear that we should eat small meals 5 to 6 times a day. Aside from a lack of evidence supporting the benefit of such a regimen in terms of a long and healthy lifespan, it is extremely difficult for most people to regulate food intake when they are told to eat so often. Even if the meals contain 305 calories each, instead of the recommended 300 calories, that extra 30 calories a day, or more than 900 calories a month, means nearly 3 pounds of extra fat every year. Not surprisingly, over the past 20 years, the period when the six-meal diet was popular, America reached a record 70% portion of overweight and obese people. If you eat only 2.5 meals a day with only one major meal, it becomes much harder to overeat, particularly on a mostly plant-based diet. It would take large portions of fish, beans, and vegetables to get to the calorie level that would cause obesity. The high nourishment of the food, plus the volume of the meal, signals to your stomach and brain that you have had enough food. In the elderly, this one major meal system may have to be broken down into 2 smaller meals to avoid digestion problems. Older people and adults prone to weight loss should stick to eating 3 meals a day plus 1 snack. For people trying to lose weight, or those who tend to be heavy, the best nutritional advice is to eat breakfast daily, have lunch or dinner, but not both, and substitute for the missed meal 1 snack containing fewer than 100 calories and no more than 3 to 5 grams of sugar. Do not skip breakfast, as this has been associated with increased risk for age-related diseases in multiple studies. Which meal you skip depends on your lifestyle. The advantage to skipping lunch is more free time and more energy. On the other hand, there is the possible disadvantage of restless sleep from having consumed a large dinner, particularly for those who suffer from acid reflux. The disadvantage to skipping dinner is that it eliminates the most social meal of the day. Observe time-restricted eating. Another common practice adopted by many centenarian groups is time-restricted eating, or confining all meals and snacks to within 11 to 12 hours or less a day. The efficiency of this method has been demonstrated in both animal and human studies. Typically, you would eat breakfast after 8 a.m. and finish dinner before 8 p.m. A shorter eating window, of 10 hours or less, can be even more effective for weight loss, but it is much harder to maintain and may increase the risk of side effects, such as developing gallstones and possibly increasing the risk of cardiovascular disease. You should also not eat within 3 to 4 hours of going to sleep. Practice periodic, prolonged fasting. People under age 65 who are neither frail nor malnourished and are free of major diseases should undergo 2 periods of 5 days a year in which they consume a relatively high-calorie fasting-mimicking diet, or FMD. Most religious groups, including Muslims, Christians, Jews, and Buddhists, have practiced some form of fast, though some of these practices have been modified or abandoned over time. Muslims practice fasting during the month of Ramadan, but in modern times the daytime fast is often accompanied by overeating at night. During Lent, Christians used to undergo a month of severe calorie restriction ending in a week of fasting, but this practice, too, has largely been abandoned today. In Chapter 6, I discuss the remarkable effects of 5-day cycles of a fasting-mimicking diet on disease risk factors and the optimization of healthy longevity. Follow the 8 points above in such a way that you reach and maintain a healthy weight and abdominal circumference. In a longitudinal study of 359,000 European adults followed over 10 years, high waist circumference and abdominal fat were associated with increased diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol, and heart disease. Having a waist circumference of more than 40 inches in men and 35 inches in women doubled the risk of premature death compared with having a waist circumference of less than 33 inches in men and 27 inches in women. Following the 8 points above will allow you to reach and maintain low visceral fat and a healthy weight and abdominal circumference. For most people, the longevity diet can be adopted simply by replacing a limited number of items with foods that are just as enjoyable, if not more so. Virtually all diets fail because they are too extreme to maintain in the long run. They also fail because they require major changes to your habits and lifestyle. For example, many new diets require low carbohydrate intake, but carbohydrates are the food people around the world enjoy the most, whether it's potatoes for Northern Europeans, pasta for Italians and Americans, or rice for Asians. Thus, very low carbohydrate diets, besides being associated with increased mortality and reduced lifespan, are not sustainable in the long run for most people. Because the longevity diet is closer to diets generally adopted by Americans, Europeans, and Asians, it can be embraced by people all over the world. In the following sections, I explain how the above dietary recommendations are rooted in the five pillars of longevity, since this is the key to understanding their effectiveness. I discuss studies of the laboratories I direct, as well as those of other laboratories and clinics. Pillar 1. Basic/Juventology Research. It is difficult to perform studies on specific human diets in mice and other simple organisms. However, basic research yields a fundamental understanding of the connection between food components, aging, and disease. For example, we know that proteins, amino acids, consistently accelerate aging in most organisms, including yeast, flies, and mice. We also know that IGF-1 and TOR-S6K, both of which are increased or activated by protein intake, are central promoters of aging and age-related diseases in mice. In a recent study testing many combinations of food components, mice, given a low-protein, high-carbohydrate diet, lived the longest but also displayed improved health. Mice on a high-protein, low-carbohydrate diet lived the shortest and had the worst health, despite the effect of the diet on weight loss. See Figure 4.2. In our recent study, we showed that simply by lowering protein intake in mice, we can reduce the incidence of melanoma and breast cancer. Even after tumors were established, their rate of growth slowed in the presence of reduced protein intake. Data from studies in mice and simple organisms also support the role of time-restricted feeding and periodic prolonged fasting in lifespan extension and reductions in age-related disease. Recently, we also showed that high sugar levels make heart cells and mice more sensitive to damage and death during chemotherapy, confirming our hypothesis that sugar makes cells more vulnerable to damage. Thus, basic/juventology research supports the pro-aging role of proteins and sugars. Pillar 2. Epidemiology. Most large population studies show an association between longevity and disease prevention, and a diet that is low in protein, largely plant and fish-based, and rich in complex carbohydrates, olive oil, and nuts. For example, our epidemiological study of 6,000 Americans suggested that consuming a high-protein diet is associated with increased levels of the pro-aging growth factor IGF-1, see Figure 4.3. A 75% increased risk of overall mortality, and a 3- to 4-fold increased risk in cancer mortality compared with consuming the low-protein and plant-based diet recommended here. See Figure 4.4. Contrary to the findings of T. Colin Campbell in the China study, which advocates consuming low levels of plant-based proteins throughout life, the beneficial effect of a low-protein diet seems to apply only before age 65. Figure 4.3. A Harvard study of nearly 130,000 doctors and nurses also indicates that a low-carb diet high in animal fat and protein is associated with increases in overall cancer and cardiovascular disease mortality, a finding that is in agreement with our research. In line with our previous protein study, a follow-up study of the same group followed by Harvard University, in which I acted as a co-author, showed that consumption of high levels of animal but not plant-based proteins was associated with increased mortality from cardiovascular disease. A similar study of 40,000 men suggests that a low-carb, high animal protein diet is associated with a twofold increase in diabetes, a finding also consistent with our discovery in the 6,000-person protein study. A number of other epidemiological studies consistently associate high IGF-1 levels in the bloodstream with an increase of twofold or more in the incidence of breast, prostate, and other cancer types. Because we know that protein consumption is the key regulator of IGF-1 levels, and that animal protein intake is usually associated with intake of saturated animal fats, these studies bolster the case for a link between cancer, diabetes, and high protein and saturated fat intake. Epidemiological studies also support the key role of nourishment in disease prevention, since populations with deficiencies in certain vitamins have been shown to have an increased incidence for a variety of diseases. For example, vitamin D deficiency has been associated with an increased risk for diabetes and autoimmune and cardiovascular diseases. Pillar 3. Clinical Studies. As I've indicated, the gold standard for demonstrating the effect of a food component or diet on longevity and diseases is direct testing in a randomized controlled clinical trial. Subjects are randomly assigned to either a group consuming a control diet, not believed to have an effect on health, or an experimental diet, expected to have a health benefit. A large randomized study to test a longevity diet against a standard diet has not been performed, but we are currently starting several trials aimed at achieving this goal. However, several existing studies do support the recommendations given above. For example, we have shown that even periodic use of a low-protein plant-based diet can reduce many markers or risk factors for aging and diseases in subjects ages 20 to 70. See Chapter 6 on fasting and fasting-mimicking diets. A research group in Spain has randomized people at risk for cardiovascular diseases to either a healthy, low-fat diet or a diet rich in olive oil or nuts. A Mediterranean diet with high levels of olive oil or 30 grams a day of nuts, walnuts, hazelnuts, almonds, was associated with reduced cardiovascular events and mortality. The protective role of nuts is also supported by an analysis of many studies investigating their effect on the prevention of multiple diseases. Another set of clinical trials clearly demonstrates that protein intake is associated with high levels of IGF-1, thus supporting the link between proteins, IGF-1, aging, and cancer. Although it was not a randomized clinical trial, Satchidananda Panda and his colleagues at the Salk Institute studied how the total number of hours that food is consumed daily and when that food is eaten are associated with sleep patterns and risk factors for diseases. They determined that people who consumed food over a period of 12 hours or more benefited from reducing the consumption time span to 12 hours or less. In support of a diet high in complex carbohydrates and good fats being the best even for weight management, when a diet very low in carbohydrates, less than 10% of calories, and high in protein, more than 20% of calories, and fats, was compared with a moderate carbohydrate regimen similar to the Okinawan diet, fat loss was similar in both cases. However, the low-carbohydrate diet caused a much higher loss of water and proteins, indicating that the seemingly large effect of very low-carb diets on weight loss actually represents loss of water and muscle in addition to fat. Pillar 4. Centenarian Studies. Areas of the world known to have the highest prevalence of centenarians, Okinawa, Japan, Loma Linda, California, small towns in Calabria and Sardinia, Italy, and in Costa Rica and Greece, all share diets that are, 1, mostly plant-based with lots of nuts and some fish, 2, low in proteins, sugars, and saturated/trans fats, and 3, high in complex carbohydrates coming from beans and other plant-based foods. Most of these centenarians ate only 2 or 3 times a day, ate light meals in the evening, and were in many cases done eating before dark. They also consumed a limited variety of foods, ones typical of their homelands. In some cases, they did modify their diet. For example, Okinawans used to get most of their calories from sweet purple potatoes, but today that is far less common. Craig Wilcox and his colleagues have compared the dietary habits of typical older people from Okinawa with those of older citizens living in the United States. As we can see in Figure 4.5, American seniors ate 10 times more meat, poultry, and eggs, and 3 times more fruit, but far less fish, half the vegetables, and 1/3 of the grains that the Okinawans did. In Figure 4.7, we see that far fewer Okinawans have cancer or cardiovascular disease than do Americans or even other people in Japan. In terms of brain aging and disease, Wilcox and his colleagues report a 30 to 50% reduction in the prevalence of dementia in Okinawans of different ages compared with that in people of the same age in the United States. Other than diet, what makes Okinawans so long-lived? Wilcox and his colleagues believe that physical activity is a key factor for their longevity and health. These activities range from gardening to martial arts to dancing. I observed similar high exercise behavior in elderly individuals when I visited 3 other zones with high longevity: Loma Linda, California, Sardinia, and Calabria, both in Italy. I go into more detail on the connection between exercise and healthy longevity in Chapter 5. Wilcox and his colleagues also report that Okinawans are very spiritual and rely both on doctors and shamans. The effect of spirituality on longevity is less clear than that of diet, but it is often found to be associated with long-lived populations. Many scientific studies suggest that spirituality can be effective in both preventing and treating some diseases and medical conditions. Having interviewed centenarians all over the world, I think the common denominator is not spirituality per se, but a sense of purpose, a will to live. A distinguished colleague once told me his theory. "What many of the longest-lived people in the world have in common," he said, "is that they are tough. They are fighters, and they will go on even when their own children have died." As did Jean Calment of France, who reached the record age of 122, outliving both her daughter and grandson by several decades. Calment quit smoking at 117, not for health reasons, but because she became too blind to light up by herself and refused to ask for help. Famously witty, she is known to have said, "I've only got one wrinkle, and I'm sitting on it." Although it will be difficult to ever quantify this, my conclusion is that some centenarians find their strength in God, some in their families, but many find it in the joy of living, in tasting an egg after going through years of war and famine when they could only dream of eggs, or simply drinking a glass of wine. Which brings me to Italy and 2 of my favorite people in the world. Salvatore Caruso and Molacchio, Italy. Although my grandparents died years ago, and even my mother and father rarely go back, I have always remembered the many summers I spent in Molacchio, and even after settling down in Los Angeles, I continued to visit. I thought this little village, lost in the Aspromonte Mountains, was worth a stop on my yearly visit home to Italy, and so were its people. But I never could have imagined that the elderly people of the little town that holds so many fond childhood memories for me would serve as a confirmation of our discoveries about nutrition and longevity in the lab and epidemiological surveys among U.S. populations. It was around 2006, and my uncle in Molacchio, the village of 2,000 people where both my parents grew up, told me that Salvatore Caruso had reached 100 years of age. Big deal, I thought. But I remembered Salvatore, il ragioniere, the accountant, who was well known for the interesting stories he told. He had even written a book chronicling his life. Year after year, the number of centenarians kept on increasing, and by 2010, 4 villagers had reached the age of 100. So I started visiting Salvatore and a few others, and I started asking questions about their lifestyle and diet. In addition to the invaluable information about diet and longevity, a great gift from these centenarians is their ability to recall 100 years of adventures, wars, and stories of all kinds in seconds to surprise you and make you laugh. Soon, I realized that Malacchio had one of the highest concentrations of centenarians in the world. Salvatore, who also owned land where he tended olive trees, always said his credo was, "No bacco, no tobacco, no venere," which didn't make him very popular around town, since it means no Bacchus, wine, no smoking, no Venus, women. As with most centenarians, however, the stories they tell can be very different from the facts. As it happens, Salvatore was married with children and liked to drink wine regularly. I did not have to ask much about his diet, since it was the same as my grandfather's. Dark bread, olives, olive oil, walnuts, almonds, stockfish, tomatoes, and most of all and almost every day, pasta e vianella, the pasta dish with lots of vegetables and beans, including green beans in the pod. Variations on this dish still represent the most frequent meals at my own table. Why did Salvatore, my grandfather, and everyone else in Molacchio eat all those beans? Because they were grown locally and were all they could afford. Not surprisingly, hardship played a key role in the historical diet of this region. In one of the documentaries filmed in Molacchio, a French television journalist asked one of the other centenarians of Molacchio how many times per week she ate meat in her younger years. At first, she didn't understand the question. When her daughter translated in the local dialect, she started to laugh. "Meat, yes, I had meat. My friends and I snuck into a wedding one time and we ate meat." We are so accustomed to thinking about meat consumption in terms of times per week that we did not realize that for some of the Molacchio centenarians, the opportunities to eat meat were rare. A few years later, I was in another magical place I like to visit every year, the mountains of southern Ecuador, where I was studying the villagers with Laronne syndrome. I was interviewed by journalist Stephen Hall, who was writing a cover story on parts of the world with extraordinary longevity for National Geographic, May 2013 issue. I told him about my grandfather's village. If you really want to meet people who make it to very old age without disease, then you must go to my parents' hometown, I told him. Stephen asked a few questions, but probably thought the same thing I did. It sounds a little too convenient. To my surprise, several months later, he emailed me from there. "I'm in Molacchio," he wrote, "and I just confirmed that there are 4 centenarians and 4 99-year-olds among its 2,000 inhabitants." The Molacchio centenarians became the centerpiece of the story. One key observation made in collaboration with my colleague Giuseppe Passerino is that the Molacchian centenarians tend to live with their sons' or daughters' families. Because the younger generation has adopted a more modern diet, we speculated that transitioning to a higher protein diet with more animal-based ingredients, which many of the centenarians did in their 80s and 90s, may contribute to their extreme longevity. In other words, maintaining a high vegetable, low protein diet for the first 70 or 80 years of life, and later switching to a diet richer in proteins but also animal-based foods like eggs, chicken, milk, and certain cheeses, may have slowed down aging and optimized the health of the Molacchio centenarians. This explanation fits with our discovery that low protein intake is associated with extended longevity and a major reduction in cancer in people age 65 and younger, but not in those above 66. In fact, we know that IGF-1 and other hormones that contribute to aging can reach very low levels after age 80. This may make a strict low-protein diet less beneficial against cancer and diabetes in later life, as well as a risk factor for frailty and defects in the immune system and wound healing. Again, this problem does not require complex changes and is solved by maintaining the longevity diet until age 65 or 70, then gradually increasing one's level of protein and general nourishment by 10 to 20% to maintain a healthy weight and muscle strength. Emma Morano, Verbania, Italy. Another one of my favorite people was Emma Morano of Verbania, Italy. Emma died in 2017 at age 117. Records show that Emma is the oldest Italian ever to have lived, and up until her death, she held the title of the oldest living person in the world. A reporter from the New York Times asked me why Emma, who ate 3 eggs a day and consumed plenty of meat, was one of the longest-lived women in human history. My response, as quoted in the article, "If you take 100 centenarians, you get 100 different elixirs of longevity." It turns out that although she ate eggs and meat in her old age, Emma's diet was probably much more plant-based, with lots of rice and minestrone for many decades of her life. More important, Emma probably had the right genes, which can increase by many-fold the chance that someone will live to 100. Her mother had died at 94, her sister at 102, two other sisters had reached 98, and her brother passed away at 90. Research shows that the sons of centenarians have an overall 50% reduction of disease onset for hypertension, stroke and seizure, cardiac disease, and diabetes. According to these data, having just one parent who lives past the age of 87 reduces your chances of getting cancer by 24%. This is analogous to something we saw among the Laran people of Ecuador. The rare individuals who maintain a very unhealthy diet become overweight or obese, but still live a long and healthy life. Furthermore, Emma was under the care of an excellent physician, Dr. Carlo Bava, whose medical decisions for the past 30 years undoubtedly contributed to her record longevity. Scientists are trying to test and produce drugs capable of causing the same effects as the genetic mutations that extend the healthy lifespan, but those won't be available for many years. For now, the food we eat is the most potent intervention available for disease prevention and treatment. Emma remembered a lot, but the things she talked about most were the death of her son, at only 7 months of age, and how she packed her bags and left her ex-husband after he abused her. That had happened in her late 30s, nearly 80 years in the past by the time she was telling me her stories. I was also impressed by how protective she was of her photo album, not letting me touch it and swatting my hand away whenever I got too close. She was letting me know that she would be needing it for a long time to come. Her zest for life was evident in other ways, too. When we visited Emma in 2015, a researcher from my group proposed to bring a scarf as a present. But I thought it might be better to bring something Emma could enjoy more, so we brought her a cake made of fruit. When I gave Emma the cake, she was tired and absent-minded, so she didn't say anything about the cake. Her reaction made me think she didn't like it, and maybe it would have been better to bring her a scarf. As we exchanged greetings, one of her nieces said, "Don't worry, Aunt, I'll put the cake right there next to you, close to the pillow." After just 5 minutes, Emma was eating the cake enthusiastically. 10 minutes later, the cake was gone. Emma had devoured it in a very organized way, feeding herself without dropping a crumb. She also had a bowl of soup and some eggs. Sardinia, the island of longevity. Although I'm only now beginning to follow the centenarians of the Nuoro region of Sardinia, Italy, researchers Gianni Pes, Michel Poulin and Luca Deana, as well as author Dan Buettner, have made this region world-famous. Certain villages in Sardinia's Blue Zone have had the number of centenarians reach levels among the highest observed anywhere in the world, and possibly even higher than those of Molacchio. Nowadays, many regions, Russia and South America in particular, claim to have high longevity zones. But the stories about longevity coming out of these areas are often invented by inhabitants who want to lure journalists and tourists. Sardinia, on the other hand, is an area of record longevity validated by demographers. The Sardinians eat a diet that is probably familiar to you by now, mostly plant-based, with beans, whole grain breads, and lots of vegetables. Because of high local production, they also consume pecorino, the high omega-3 cheese made from ewe's milk. Loma Linda, California's land of longevity. An hour's drive from Los Angeles is a Seventh-day Adventist church that has been under close scrutiny by Dr. Gary Fraser and others of Loma Linda University. When researchers compared the longevity of Californians belonging to this church with the longevity of all Californians, they found that the Adventist men, who are vegetarians, lived nearly 10 years longer than the average California man. Adventist women lived on average 6 years longer than California women in general. Again, not surprisingly, among the very long-lived vegetarian California Adventists, those who consumed nuts at least 5 times a week, 2 or more servings of vegetables per day, and 3 or more servings of legumes per week, lived the longest and had reduced incidence of disease. Other common characteristics of California Adventists, besides vegetarianism, are eating light dinners early, exercising often, and maintaining a healthy weight and abdominal circumference. Even in Southern California, the center for fad diets, members of the longest-lived community consume lots of vegetables, legumes, walnuts, and almonds, which they spread across 2 or 3 daily meals served within 12 hours. Pillar 5. Studies of Complex Systems. This is clearly the most abstract of the pillars, but it can play an important supporting role in reaching solid conclusions. For example, we can better understand the effect of age on the requirement for higher protein and food intake in elderly and frail Americans and in centenarians by considering how poorly maintained cars may lose fuel efficiency as they get older. Another way to use complex systems like cars or planes to understand human aging is by comparing the complicated nourishment of the human body to not only gasoline, the source of energy, but also brake fluid, radiator coolant, and motor oil. For example, the radiator is not involved in running the car, but its ability to cool the engine makes it essential for the car's longevity. In either the human body or a car, low fluid level, even of fluids needed for a relatively minor subsystem such as the radiator, can accelerate aging and cause the whole system to break down. Undernourishment in humans is like low levels of motor oils or other fluids in cars. Another comparison, the car, like the human body, needs both high-quality oils and fuels for its brakes and engine to operate properly. If these products are of low quality or the wrong kind, similar to saturated fats in our diet, the engine and other parts of the car can be damaged and deteriorate faster. Eventually, the damage will lead to car problems that must be fixed, just as the aging process in humans leads to diseases. These analogies help simplify the complexity of human biochemistry and underline the fundamental link between nutrients, their functions, aging, and disease. As I have already mentioned, whereas the correct levels of proteins, unsaturated fats, and carbohydrates are beneficial, excess levels of proteins, saturated fats, and sugars can accelerate aging and damage the human body. This is not surprising, considering that humans have evolved in an environment where proteins, sugars, and saturated fats were rarely available at high levels for long periods. The longevity diet in summary. 1. Eat mostly vegan plus a little fish, limiting meals with fish to a maximum of 2 or 3 times per week. Choose fish, crustaceans, and mollusks with a high omega-3, omega-6, and vitamin B12 content. Salmon, anchovies, sardines, cod, sea bream, trout, clams, shrimp. See Appendix B. Pay attention to the quality of the fish, choosing those with low levels of mercury. 2. If you are below the age of 65, keep the intake of protein low, 0.31 to 0.36 grams per pound of body weight. That comes to 40 to 47 grams of protein per day for a person weighing 130 pounds and 60 to 70 grams of protein per day for someone weighing 200 to 220 pounds. Those beyond age 65 should slightly increase their protein intake, including fish, eggs, white meat, and products derived from goats and sheep to preserve muscle mass. Consume beans, chickpeas, green peas, and other legumes as your main source of protein. 3. Minimize saturated fats from animal and vegetable sources, meat, cheese, and sugar, and maximize good fats and complex carbs. Eat whole grains and high quantities of vegetables, tomatoes, broccoli, carrots, legumes, etc., with generous amounts of olive oil, 3 tablespoons per day, and nuts, 1 ounce per day. See the biweekly diet program in Appendix A. 4. Follow a diet with high vitamin and mineral content and complete it with a multivitamin buffer every 3 days. 5. Select ingredients among those discussed in this book that your ancestors would have eaten. 6. Based on your weight, age, and abdominal circumference, decide whether to have 2 or 3 meals per day. See Chapter 8 for diabetes guidelines. If you are overweight or tend to gain weight easily, consume 2 meals a day, breakfast and either lunch or dinner, plus 2 low-sugar, less than 5 grams, snacks with fewer than 100 calories each. If you are already at a normal weight, or if you tend to lose weight easily, or are over 65 and of normal weight, eat 3 meals a day and 1 low-sugar, less than 3 to 5 grams, snack with fewer than 100 calories. 7. Confine all eating to within a 12-hour period. For example, start after 8 a.m. and end before 8 p.m. Don't eat anything within 3 to 4 hours of bedtime. 8. Until age 65 to 70, depending on weight and frailty, undergo 5 days of a fasting-mimicking diet, see Chapter 6, every 1 to 6 months, based on your goals and, if possible, a dietitian's or medical doctor's advice. 9. Follow points 1 through 8 in such a way that you reach and maintain a healthy weight and abdominal circumference. Chapter 5. Exercise and Healthy Longevity. A Lesson from Centenarians. In general, those who reach age 100 in good health have stayed active or very active into old age. There are, of course, exceptions. If you look at centenarians, or even just within your own extended family, you will likely find someone who beat the odds, eating whatever they wanted, seldom exercising, yet making it to a ripe old age. Nir Barzilai of the Albert Einstein College of Medicine studies Ashkenazi Jewish centenarians in New York, many of whom are completely sedentary, he reports. Their longevity is likely due to genetics. Clearly, genes are the most powerful factor in determining lifespan. We know this because we have identified mutations that cause a high degree of protection against age-related diseases in both mice and humans. We also know that a chimpanzee can eat the perfect diet and exercise regularly, yet never come close to the average human lifespan. Despite sharing 95% of our DNA sequence, chimps rarely live beyond age 50. There is nothing we can do about our genes. But after making changes in the diet, the second major factor affecting lifespan is physical activity. In Okinawa, I heard stories of fishermen who never retire, and I watched a woman in her 90s dance with a large bottle on her head, something she did many times a week. When she wasn't dancing, she enjoyed playing traditional Japanese musical instruments. In Calabria, 110-year-old Salvatore Caruso told me how he walked every day to the Oliveto, olive grove, and how much labor his olive trees required. In Loma Linda, the very long-lived Seventh-day Adventists are famous for their high levels of exercise, including walking fast and going to the gym. When Dan Buettner asked very long-lived Costa Ricans to share the secret to their longevity, they said they enjoyed doing physical work all their lives. When I posed the same question to the shepherds of towns with famously long-lived populations in Sardinia, they told me that every year they left their homes around November so they could walk their sheep to lower elevations and warmer areas where the animals can find food, and they didn't return until April or May. What physical activity is best for healthy longevity? the one you enjoy most, but also the one you can easily incorporate into your daily schedule and the one you can keep doing up to your 100th birthday and beyond. Many Okinawans practice martial arts, especially a dance-inspired version of Tai Chi. The type of exercise you choose isn't important. What's important is working all your body parts until you breathe rapidly and sweat for 5 to 10 hours a week. I'm not talking about running weekly marathons. Overworking your body is not a good idea. If you consider the complex systems Pillar described earlier and think about a car, why is it that no one wants to buy a 5-year-old car with 100,000 miles on the odometer? Because despite being relatively new, it has been driven too much. You can replace the tires and repaint the chassis, but you cannot change every belt, hose, and valve, and there's a high chance that some overworked component will break down. On the other hand, you don't want to leave your car parked in the garage most of the time, as this will also eventually cause it to break down. The same holds true for the human body. It's important to exercise, but not to overexercise, because knees, hips, and joints will eventually get damaged, particularly if you continue to exercise when you feel pain. On the bright side, certain exercises and diet can cause tissue to self-repair and regenerate, so the human body has built-in advantages over a car. Optimizing exercise for longevity. The following guidelines are for exercising to maximize health and longevity. Walk fast for an hour every day. The goal of walking for an hour a day can easily be achieved. For example, pick a coffee shop or restaurant 15 minutes from your work and make a point of going there twice a day. It can also be achieved on the weekend by walking when you would normally drive. Every year I take my USC students from Los Angeles to Genoa, Italy for 3 weeks. On the first day, we do a walking tour of the city. I then urge them to continue walking everywhere for the duration of the trip. By the end of the course, they are used to walking around the city and realize that they enjoy it and feel better in general. Ride, run, or swim 30 to 40 minutes every other day, plus 2 hours on the weekend. The best way to achieve this goal is to have both a stationary bike and a road bike. When you can, ride outside. When you can't, use the exercise bike in high gear. Use a bike that provides the option of high magnetic resistance, which makes it hard to pedal as if you were going uphill. After 10 minutes, you should be sweating. If you ride on the street, go uphill for at least 10 to 15 minutes. Do this for about 40 minutes every other day and for 2 hours on the weekend. Bicycling may be healthier than running because it minimizes stress on the joints. However, a long-term study showed that long-distance running among healthy older adults was not associated with osteoarthritis, so an injury caused by long-distance running may be less common than we would expect. In fact, another study that followed 74,752 runners for 7 years concluded that running reduced both weight and the risk of osteoarthritis. Following one pillar of longevity, studies of complex systems, we could conclude that bicycling is preferable to running. But following another pillar, epidemiology, running would appear to be equally good. Its beneficial effects, however, may change over time and may vary in individuals who are injured, have joint damage, and continue to run. Thus, I would recommend a bicycle as a first choice, but running is also fine if the limits described below are followed. Swimming is another excellent form of exercise, although its beneficial effects on longevity have received less scrutiny than those of running. Use your muscles. Humans evolved as a species that walks, runs, climbs trees and hills, and uses a variety of muscles all the time. Now, people use elevators and escalators instead of stairs, drive instead of walk, use dishwashers and washing machines instead of washing dishes and clothes by hand, buy food instead of growing it, and hire people to do even minor repair work around the house instead of fixing things ourselves. Every muscle of the body needs to be used frequently because muscles grow and maintain or gain strength only in response to being challenged. Climbing 6 flights of stairs rapidly can cause leg pain, especially if you haven't done it in a long time. Back pain is evidence of minor injury to your muscles. In the presence of sufficient amounts of proteins, muscle injury leads to the activation of muscle satellite cells and eventually to muscle growth. Muscles can be slightly injured and rebuilt by doing simple everyday tasks that are challenging. Of course, minor injury can turn into major injury if the burden in weight-bearing exercise is too high or if you keep re-injuring already inflamed muscle or cartilage. Muscle training must be balanced to avoid both acute injuries and the slow, chronic damage that comes with ignoring pain and continuing to put stress on an injured joint. Exercise length, strength, and efficacy. How long and how strenuously should you exercise to optimize healthy longevity? Most studies linking exercise and longevity are sustained by just a single pillar, epidemiology, which is insufficient to reliably conclude a primary role for exercise in longer life. Nonetheless, exercise and longevity studies still provide very valuable information, particularly when hundreds of thousands of subjects are followed. An Australian study looking for a link between exercise and longevity monitored 204,542 people, ages 45 to 75, for 8 years. The group, reporting more than 150 minutes a week of moderate to vigorous exercise, displayed a 47% reduction in overall mortality. While the group exercising at moderate to vigorous levels for 300 minutes per week had a 54% reduction. So twice as much exercise did not provide much additional benefit. The effect was increased by another 9% in those who sometimes exercised vigorously. Metabolic equivalent tasks, METs, are commonly used to express the intensity of physical activity. One MET is defined as the energy cost of sitting quietly and is equivalent to a caloric consumption of 1 kilocalorie per kilogram per hour. Moderate exercise involves movement that burns 3 to 6 times the calories used when sitting still, 3 to 6 METs. Vigorous exercise burns calories at more than 6 times the resting level, more than 6 METs. Another very large study combining data from 6 studies performed in the United States and Europe followed 661,137 men and women with a median age of 62 over 14 years. During that period, 116,686 participants died. The data showed that even those who exercised less than 150 minutes at moderate intensity or 75 minutes at vigorous intensity per week had a 20% reduced risk of mortality compared with those who did not exercise. Mortality was reduced by 31% in those who exercised for more than 150 minutes a week at moderate intensity or for more than 75 minutes a week at vigorous intensity. And the risk of dying was reduced by 37% in those exercising more than 300 minutes a week at moderate intensity or 150 minutes at high intensity. Again, the difference between exercising for 150 or 300 minutes was minimal. Exercising more than this resulted in very minor additional health benefits, but the study showed a trend for a potentially less beneficial effect among those who exercised 10 times the recommended minimum. Protein intake and weight training. High protein intake is believed by most to be necessary to maintain or increase muscle mass. However, several studies indicate that exceeding a daily protein intake of 0.33 grams per pound of body weight does not increase muscle growth, and that consuming 30 grams of protein in a single low-carbohydrate or very low-carbohydrate meal optimizes muscle synthesis. For best results, the 30 grams of protein should be consumed 1 to 2 hours after resistance training, such as lifting weights or doing push-ups. In both young and older individuals, the ideal muscle synthesis occurred when the weight being lifted or pushed was 60 to 75% of one's maximum capacity. Optimizing energy in summary. 1. Walk fast for an hour every day. 2. Take the stairs instead of escalators and elevators. 3. On the weekend, walk everywhere, even faraway places. Avoid polluted areas as much as you can. 4. Do moderate exercise for 2.5 to 5 hours a week, with some of it in the vigorous range. Most of the beneficial effects appear to be caused by the first 2.5 hours of exercise, making the additional exercise optional. 5. Use weight training or weight-free exercises to strengthen all muscles. 6. To maximize muscle growth, consume at least 30 grams of protein in a single meal 1 to 2 hours after a relatively intense weight training session. Chapter 6. Fasting Mimicking Diets, Weight Management, and Healthy Longevity. As I mentioned earlier, in 1992, when I saw my mentor Roy Walford exit Biosphere 2 after nearly 2 years of a severe calorie-restricted diet, I looked at Roy and the other 7 emaciated Biospherians and thought, there must be a better way to delay aging and prevent disease. 10 years later, as I was searching for ways to protect cancer patients while leaving their cancer cells vulnerable to therapy, I remembered the baker's yeast experiments from my doctoral research at UCLA. Moving yeast cells from a sugar-rich medium into a medium of pure water had protected them from various toxins and also caused cells to live twice as long. We eventually determined that switching mice from their normal high-calorie diet to water also protected them from damage caused by the same toxins. And since we knew that both humans and monkeys kept on chronic calorie restriction were at risk for side effects, immune system deficiencies, problems with wound healing, extremely low weight, and high levels of stress, to name a few, I wondered, could the protective effect of short periods of fasting continue after the mice returned to a normal diet? If so, we could design a periodic short-term fast that would be easy to implement. The burden would be minimal, and the timing and frequency would be within the individual's control. By limiting the period of fasting to 4 to 5 days, no more than once a month, we could also minimize the side effects. It was a great plan in theory, but when we tested water-only fasting in cancer patients, the 3-day trial was not exactly a roaring success. Not because the results were bad, they were in fact very promising. But because the patients who were undergoing chemotherapy at the time found it difficult to undergo such an extreme fast, and their doctors and nurses were also very resistant to the idea. See Chapter 7 for more on cancer prevention and treatment. So we needed to find a different solution. In our cancer studies with mice, we had determined that 4 major changes in the blood need to occur to show that the mouse had entered a protected state as a result of fasting. 1. Lower levels of the growth factor IGF-1. 2. Lower levels of glucose. 3. Higher levels of ketone bodies, the byproduct of fat breakdown. And 4. Higher levels of a growth factor inhibitor, IGF-BP1. To achieve these results, that is to mimic fasting, we fine-tuned a diet low in proteins and sugars and rich in healthy fats. We took advantage of many additional nutritechnologies developed in my lab to ensure proper nourishment and maximum therapeutic effects. We called this regimen the Fasting Mimicking Diet, FMD, and later developed it into the product Prolon. When we tested the 3-day-long Prolon in 16-month-old mice, the equivalent of a 45-year-old human, the results were remarkable. Their 75% lifespan, that is the age at which 75% of the mice were still alive, was extended by 18%. Their 50% lifespan grew by 11%. The mice ate the same quantities of food per month as the mice on the non-Prolon diet, yet they lost weight, primarily abdominal fat, without loss of muscle mass. Age-dependent loss of bone mineral density dropped. Tumors were reduced by nearly half, and cancer onset for the great majority of mice on Prolon was pushed back to 26 months, equivalent to approximately 70 years for humans, from the onset at 20 months, equivalent to approximately age 60 in humans, in the group on the normal diet. Furthermore, the abnormal lesions in mice on prolon tended to occur in no more than two organs, indicating